Hello and welcome to the Green Room Golf Course podcast from the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. Thanks for listening to this podcast, which sheds a light upon the golf industry and what it takes to maintain a modern course. I hope you enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to this week's episode. Did you know that as the golfing season comes to a close, we're already putting together the next edition of Your Course magazine? Once again, the magazine will be sent out to every golf club in the country and will be packed full of features that inform golfers about the hard work of the nation's greenkeepers. Among the features will be a look at golf course ecology and the vital role greenkeepers can play in creating a network of living landscapes across the UK. For this feature, I visited Brandon Reach Nature Reserve for a conversation with Ian Jelly, who's been working closely with courses across the region on behalf of the Warwickshire Wildlife Trust. It's been reported that Britain's wildlife is at serious risk. One in five mammals is apparently at risk of extinction, and it's incredible to think that golf courses can play such an important role in supporting the UK's wildlife and its recovery. I hope you enjoy the conversation with Ian. Hopefully it'll inspire others to start a conversation with their local wildlife trust or other conservation charities, and golf courses will begin to be recognised as the havens for wildlife that they so often are. I actually first met Ian at Continue to Learn 2019, and so it's a good opportunity for me to say, don't forget, we're gearing up to the launch of the Continue to Learn brochure for January 2020. The education programme is going to be brilliant once again. So keep an eye out for the brochure included with your October edition of Greenkeeper International. I hope you enjoy the show.
It goes back about probably nearly 10 years. Our relationship started with Coventry Golf Club, who are based in Finham. And we got talking to them about how we could help them essentially get more recognition, because they thought they were doing quite a lot at the time for wildlife. And yeah, they came across the International Geo Award and were quite interested in applying for that, but wanted to formalise what they've been working on a bit more effectively. So we helped them write a management plan, we gave them some initial advice, and they applied for the Geo Award and were successful. And for a long time, they became corporate members, and we had a good working relationship with them. Mm-hmm. For probably 7 or 8 years, it was ticking over nicely with us supporting them when they needed it, them supporting us as well as corporate members. And that was about the level of our sort of involvement in golf clubs. And then about 2 years ago, my post was created at the Wildlife Trust. And essentially my job is to try and work in partnership with other people to try and influence their land management. So I head up the Living Landscapes Department within Warwickshire Wildlife Trust. And that the remit of that is to try and create bigger, better, more joined up areas for wildlife and people, with the idea being that we can't own everything, and that if we can inspire other people to manage their land better, then wildlife can live beyond the borders of our nature reserves, and that when people are out in their daily lives, they'll interact with wildlife more regularly and therefore appreciate it more. Right. So it works for people and it works for wildlife at the same time. So we do that in a number of different ways, and we work with all sorts of different people, from like farmers to private business to councils, and golf courses was on my list of kind of things to do and look at. And so we started to put a bit more resource and time into trying to talk to golf courses, and we used Coventry as an example and went back to them, and they said that the help that we'd had given them over the years had been good, but it was a bit too detailed. And actually moving forward, what they'd like to do is try and simplify it a bit more so that they could make it easier for the ground staff to implement the things that the suggestions we're making, but also to engage their members more effectively.
Yeah.
So we reflected on what we'd done originally, which the first management plan was about 45 pages long and was a bit of a thesaurus,
right,
and the sort of thing that sticks on a shelf and doesn't necessarily get referenced too much.
Yeah.
So we went back to that, and as part of their renewed accreditation for the Geo Award, they've just been accredited for the third time, we simplified the management plan right back down to about 8 pages long. And in effect, we took a completely different angle from where we'd originally come from, the position. So what our strategy is now, whether it be golf courses or other types of business, is we try and understand what motivates the person we're talking to start with, and what their daily business is and what's important to them.
Yeah.
And then we think about how we can find middle ground between what we're trying to achieve and what they're trying to achieve. So rather than coming into the conversation and saying to the golf course, wouldn't it be brilliant if you saw barn owls on your golf course? We think, okay, well, what habitat do barn owls need? They need long grass so that the small mammals that they eat can have a home themselves. If we can talk to the golf course about any areas that they're managing that they could perhaps let the grass go longer, they can have efficiency savings as a result of that. And we can start the conversation focusing on efficiency savings and what they'd like to spend their time on rather than what they are doing.
Yeah.
And we can help them identify areas of the golf course that potentially aren't the areas that are focused on play, but if with small changes to the management can really make a big impact for wildlife. And the knock-on effect of that is it benefits the barn owl. We don't even mention barn owls until we're way down the line. We start off very much about what their business is and where their frustrations are and where their focuses are and what they'd like to spend more time on, basically. So thinking about cost savings, thinking about staff time, thinking about resource and times of year and when they're busy and when they're not, and things like that. So with that basis, we rewrote the management plan and simplified it. And alongside the prescriptions that were outlined about the different habitats, we also then incorporated a kind of a business case for it, because the guys we're talking to at Coventry Golf Club are really passionate about wildlife, but not all members really understand why it's important. So in order to help educate people about why they should perhaps change the management slightly, we've tried to explain the story behind why they're doing it, so that if members suddenly realise that an out-of-bounds area that used to perhaps be kept really pristine is now being left to go a bit more wild, there's a story behind that, so it doesn't just look like they've been lazy and cutting corners. It's explaining what they're doing.
Yeah. Were you surprised that golf courses with small budget, small teams, were managing these areas anyway? Were you coming in thinking, why are they doing that anyway?
Yeah, well, yes, to a certain extent, but equally, you know, golf courses by their nature are kind of, you know, well manicured environments, so it makes sense that, you know, it might be difficult for someone to stop even when it's out of the main focus of play, just because that's how they've always done it, and the perception of doing a good job is when everything looks neat and tidy and then, you know, there's no kind of overgrown areas, but actually that's what wildlife needs. So we've tried to really focus and say to the guys, look, we don't want to impact on your business. If at any point we give you advice that is contrary to the game of golf, then tell us at that point so we can have a conversation and see if we can work around it, because there's no point in us coming up with loads of prescriptions that actually they look at and think we can never do that because we're a golf course. So we have a conversation if we suggest something that is maybe going to get in the way. An example being, we've talked about leaving longer areas of grass alongside the river to try and reduce any potential nutrient flow that might come off the golf course and going into the water, because that's bad for wildlife and bad for the river itself. But they're fed back that, you know, in certain areas that's difficult for play because people can lose their balls in that, and it's on the main part of the playing room of the golf course, and members want it to be closely mown right up to the edge of the riverbank. We've managed to look at that in certain areas, and where it's possible, leave it longer, and where it's not possible, just, you know, recognise the fact that it's a golf course and we need to work with them. So the whole approach really is to try and get that middle ground to understand that they've still got to make the golf course viable and, you know, attractive place to play golf, otherwise it undermines the whole business model. Mm-hmm. But everyone can play their part, and the approach with this is that if we get every golf course in the country, there's 2,500 golf courses in the country, if we can get every golf course in the country to just do a little bit, collectively that's a big area. And it goes back to this living landscapes idea that we have, where bigger, better, more joined up areas, if everybody's playing their part, you've suddenly got these kind of pieces of the jigsaw that fit together alongside our nature reserves and alongside canals and local parks and farmland that enables wildlife to live in a bigger area. So we took that example with Coventry Golf Club and then started to talk to other golf courses in the area. And since then, we've now developed relationships with another three. So we're now working with Stoneleigh Deer Park Golf Club, Stratford Oaks Golf Club and the Warwickshire Golf and Country Club. And all three of those have approached us, having heard about the stuff that we're doing. And they're all coming at it from a slightly different angle. In some situations, wildlife is providing challenges for them in terms of impacting on the golf course, like badgers digging up tees and things like that. In other situations, it's about they know they've got a lot of good stuff there and they just want to make sure that they're doing what's right for the golf course. And in others, it's trying to help them stand apart from other golf courses that are around their area and saying, well, look, if we could make our sort of a unique selling point that we're really a lovely aesthetic place to play where you can see wildlife as part of the game, that might be a reason why people join as a member as opposed to the golf club down the road, who's a bit more kind of monocultured. And in each of those, we try to understand what their business drivers are, where their sort of red lines are and where they can't change some of their management practices and where we can work with them. But what I've been surprised with all of them is that they're all in their own way doing some really good stuff. Talked earlier about the fact that they don't use as many chemicals now that they do in say in some agricultural systems. So therefore golf courses are improving in terms of general biodiversity. And in the case of some like Stoneleigh Deer Park Golf Club, they have really old veteran trees that have been on the golf course for upwards of 400 years old. Now they're some of the biggest, oldest trees in the whole of Warwickshire. So Stoneleigh Deer Park Golf Club is, you know, a real haven for wildlife because of those factors. We haven't got any trees on our nature reserves that are that old, so they're actually outdoing us as a golf club. And generally speaking, with trees, the older the tree gets, the more wildlife associated with it gets. So you get, you know, thousands, literally thousands of species associated with a veteran oak tree. So these are like cities, basically, in amongst the golf course. And, you know, it's a regular golf course underneath, and 95% of the members walk by and probably don't even notice the massive tree that their ball's just hit. Mm-hmm. But they are, you know, icons in the landscape, and we're trying to help them sort of recognise their importance. They've already done a lot of work over the years to understand that they're iconic. But we're hopefully now just tweaking some of the advice and helping reassure them, actually, that a lot of the stuff they've been doing already is on the right course. So it's really exciting.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's really interesting. In terms of you got the motivation, and you're talking to the green staff at the golf club, so you talk to the members as well to explain, to sort of lend weight to what the green teams are saying?
So typically how our approach works is, well, that normally at the moment they're getting in touch with us via email, then I'm having a quick conversation with them and arranging an initial meeting, going to the clubhouse, normally talking to the green staff and then a committee or some members that are sat down at the same time, and we outline the sort of our approach and try and reassure them that we're not going to try and turn the golf course into a nature reserve, and we're not trying to replicate what we do because we recognise it as a golf course. Give some examples of how we can help, and then suggest a follow-up meeting where we take a tour around in a buggy and look at the landscape that they're managing and try and understand what key features they've already got that they could improve on.
Yeah.
And that typically takes a couple of hours, and then I write up a brief couple of sides report and say, you know, with your ponds, this is working really well, this is what you should try and do to improve it. Your woodland areas, you could try and tweak this, or you could manage them in this way. Some of the areas over here which aren't in play, you could do this for and aim for this species to support that. And that, at a very basic level, that's kind of where it can stop, and that doesn't cost them anything. It's just part of us trying to empower other people to do more stuff. Mm-hmm. And then if they want to grow that relationship and do more stuff over time, then we're able to write management plans and other more in-depth support for them, like we have done with Coventry Golf Club. But that costs money because it takes more of our time, and we're a charity and we need to cover that cost.
Yeah. We offer a very similar service now at Big O's. James Hutchinson, our ecology guy, has been in post for nearly 4 years now. It was a very similar thing, and he says that a lot to people, they expect him to arrive on site and say what they could be doing and where they should be focusing, but in many cases, and she's pointing out what they're already doing and saying doing well.
Yeah.
And what's surprised you most about working with greenkeepers? You know, what's been the most surprising thing for you? How engaged they are?
I think it is, yeah. It's how engaged they are, and also how the lengths that they've gone to and the pride that they take in managing the course for wildlife as well as for golf. because they're obviously very proud of, you know, the playing surface and their sort of ability to keep the course open during hazardous weather conditions and things like that. But it's the little things like with the veteran trees and the the pond management. When we've gone on the tours around, they've shown me, you know, some examples of kind of the management they've been doing already, and asked whether that's right. And in most cases, it's spot on. And that, but as much of our role as well as advising is to provide that reassurance and that kind of congratulations and well done when they are doing stuff that's, that's really good. And they've also, you know, been really keen to share their own wildlife experiences with us. So part of the tour round, when I was at Stoneleigh, they grabbed some great footage that they'd got of an otter swimming in the River Avon that goes through the course. And just, you know, they're out there every day. They know their courses much better than I do. So it's great to be able to sort of gain their wisdom and their information and their knowledge of the courses. And often the greenkeepers are, you know, been working on the same site for years and years, sometimes more than a decade. So their knowledge of kind of, you know, where it floods, if it floods, and changing seasonal patterns and anything that they've observed over the years, different bird species that they've seen that maybe aren't there anymore, is really valuable. And that helps us provide the advice in the first place, because, you know, we're not taking a snapshot at the end of a day. We've got all that knowledge in the background of what they've seen and what they've observed over time.
Yeah, you were at BTME this year and you were speaking at Continue to Learn. Well, first off, I'll ask you that. What was that experience like? Were you surprised at, like, how many greenkeepers are? You're here, you're working with four classes. Did you think it was quite isolated, or were you aware that there were so many people interested? And
I found it really inspiring, actually, as somebody from outside the sector who came into the conference not really knowing the scale of it across the 4 days, but also the scale of who attended the seminar that I was involved in. There was a lot of enthusiasm in the room. You know, there were several different speakers all talking on different subjects. I didn't hear one negative comment the entire time. People were really enthused and you know, keen to share their experiences from elsewhere in the country. And again, it was a real example of how much good stuff is already going on. And I think the industry as a whole, a key kind of priority for it going forward should be to try and, you know, shout about what it's doing and raise that awareness of the good stuff that is going on. Because I think that would help, you know, foster more support and enthusiasm for what they're doing.
Jacobson and Bigger recognise the importance of preparing greenkeepers to take on the role of head greenkeeper or course manager. The Future Turf Managers initiative has been designed to provide practical tools and guidance to help candidates pursue their career aspirations through a 3-day professional development conference. Working with professional trainers, mentors, Jacobson and Bigger staff, graduates leave FTMI with a clear understanding of what the future holds and a realistic overview of the expectations that come with a management position. Applications for FTMI run from September until October, so if you're interested in taking the next big step in your career, head to the Member Opportunities section of the Bigger website to find out more. Links are in the show notes.
We're talking about promoting wildlife on courses, and 99% of the time, that's fantastic. But you mentioned badges, and it's on your logo, Wildlife Trust logos, badges. Badges, they're not always great on a golf course. They tear the turf up looking for chafer grubs. What do you ever have a conversation with somebody, courses? Do they look at you and say, we've got badges and there's nothing we can do, like, help?
Yeah.
Do you ever have that conversation?
We have had questions about badges and the impact that they have, and also geese and the impact that they have, geese, particularly course, when you've got open water. Yeah. The reality is that a lot of wildlife is protected by law, and therefore to directly harm or even to negligently harm them, you can get prosecuted for, and people need to tread very carefully. So I think our first advice is just really think about and research before you're considering any type of management activity. In terms of providing a solution, our approach is really to try and look at the golf course and understand the behaviours of the animals involved. Badgers in particular are real creatures of habit, and trying to kind of restrict them from an area or prevent them from doing something, essentially they're following their course of behaviour that they do fairly regularly, and they're looking for the least effort to provide the quickest win in terms of meal or anything else. So the reason why they dig up the tees is because the grass is really closely mown, and the grubs and the earthworms that they're looking for are close to the surface because of the way we're managing the golf course. So it's a challenge in that situation to prevent them from doing that, because they know that that's the situation. if you can understand where their set is and their movement patterns, potentially you can manage some of the out-of-bound areas and encourage them to go elsewhere. Trying to restrict them by putting up fences and other things is really difficult. And, you know, one, you're potentially going to be committing an offence legally, but two, you might also put a lot of expense in and not actually solve the problem either. So our advice is to try and encourage them to go elsewhere through positive. So, for example, supplementary feeding them in other areas can help deter them away from an area that you've got an issue with. And then the backup plan to that is to try and find ways of altering the course or living with them in a way that doesn't disrupt play and have a negative impact on the players.
Supplementary feeding, would that include like looking where their set is and leaving bare areas of earth or something that are easy to get through? Would you actually be feeding them something?
You can feed them supplementary. Basically, they're omnivorous, so they have quite a varied diet, and they will eat all sorts of food, grain and other types of things during certain times of the year, berries and things like that. Mm-hmm. So by managing areas near to their set, if they're walking across half a golf course to get to what they perceive to be the best food source area, if you've got an area that's nearer to their set, that's often in the rougher part of the golf course, the unmanaged part, you might be able to manage that effectively. That in the first instance appears to be a cost, because you're thinking, well, we didn't used to cut this and now we're cutting it and it's only for the badgers. But if that means that you then don't have to repair the tee so often, you're saving money elsewhere. So again, that's what we're trying to show, where sometimes there is a cost. Actually, in the grand scheme of things, it's neutral, or perhaps even an efficiency or a financial saving because of the time spent elsewhere.
And you mentioned geese. I mean, what can you do about it? Because they come and they make a mess.
They do. And particularly canard geese, the flocks can get to significant numbers, and they can have an impact on other wildlife. And when they come out onto the course, the webbed feet can trample down and cause poaching, and just the muck can be an issue as well. Again, they are protected, and therefore the way you've got to manage them is to try and be fully aware of what the legislation says and how you can do that. A lot of it's around the lake design, because they're a bit like planes in that they need a large area to land on. And if you can design the pond in a way that it's not as accessible for them to have a gradual landing, they don't tend to land, for example, on smaller water bodies. If they've got a large expanse of lake, then they'll come down and land as they would do on a runway. So you can design that out by creating islands and other things in the water body if you've got a large lake that just disrupt the area of water. And then from a goose's point of view, when it's flying above, it's not as appealing as it would be if it's a large expanse of water that it could have a nice soft landing on. But again, mowing the grass really short for a golf course presents that other alternative as a landing and taking off point. So you are up against it with golf course management, but it's just there are things that you can do around the edge to improve the likelihood of success.
Yeah, deterring them.
Yeah.
It seems like you guys here in Warwickshire are leading the way with the conversation. Is that fair? Are you having conversations with other wildlife trusts about how they can engage with golf courses?
There's 46 wildlife trusts around the UK, and we're a federated structure, so we're all independent, but we can collaborate and come together and share best practice and work regionally or nationally if we want to. Collectively, we manage about 2,500 nature reserves, which is roughly the same number as golf courses in the UK. We're all different, and therefore we have local priorities that are different, and all of our staff sort of structure is different. In some parts of the country, there are other wildlife trusts that are working with golf courses, but not everyone. But we're all approaching this living landscapes approach of trying to work at a landscape scale and do this bigger, better, more joined up approach to try and work and inspire other people to change their management practices. So we've put some time in because we can see there's a real opportunity in Warwickshire. I think if other wildlife trusts saw the opportunities and the outcomes that we're starting to achieve, more will follow suit. And I think if a golf course in another part of the country contacted their local wildlife trust, they would certainly get some support back. Now, whether that's a site visit or whether that's just some information via email would depend on how much that charity has the resource at the time, really.
I also find it really interesting the aspect that when you look at ecology and you assume that there'd be a cost to implementing things to promote wildlife, but in many ways you are actually saving money, like you said, leaving the rough.
Yeah. Well, in terms of the cost savings, as well as the grass management, which is an obvious one for the kind of out-of-bounds areas, the other area that we've been focusing on that tends to be quite receptive is the management of trees on the site. So tree safety obviously is important for players, and they don't want any kind of potential tree felling issues during high winds or what have you. But often it needs to be done with a risk assessment in mind, and our advice essentially is to where there's no non-playing areas, you can reduce the intensity of the management of trees in those areas to basically promote dead wood, because there's a whole range of different wildlife that lives in either dead tree branches or dead trees that are still standing or trees that are on the ground. And that often forms the base of the food chain that all the other wildlife then eats. And then you get the more iconic species like the birds of prey or the top predators that people are more interested in seeing. So our advice is to try and think about the absolute base of the food chain and how can we get the kind of the plant communities and the wood, dead wood and live wood communities to support that bigger food chain, because it is all interconnected. So if somebody comes to us and is interested in having barn owls on their golf course or kingfishers or otters, you can't just get something like that and plonk it there and expect it to stay. You need it to have the right food, the right sort of shelter, the right sort of habitat for raising young and things like that. So we need to think about what they eat and often what their prey species then eat. And then if you can get all of that right, you then have the bigger species that people are more interested in seeing actually residing on the golf course. And in the case of otters, where we've got rivers running through, there are ways in which you can encourage the otter to stay in the vicinity of the golf course and to, you know, rest up or raise young there, when obviously it's covering a maybe several miles of a river. But golf courses are great places for them to you know, in the rough areas or the out-of-bounds areas, to lie up and be fairly undisturbed in comparison to maybe an urban area or an agricultural area where things are passing through more regularly.
Yeah, I'm interested. We just had the US Open at Pebble Beach, and one of the things that really made the news was the golf balls. The amount of golf balls, something like 5 million golf balls in the water just around it.
Yeah.
And I'm aware that golf clubs, you know, where they do have water courses, a lot of water get in, you know, a lot of balls do get into the water and they're toxic. I'm worried that you could be attracting the wildlife to a golf course through all these things that are then actually having a detrimental effect on the wildlife when it comes in. You
know? Well, from our perspective, the golf courses have been located where they have been normally for either because it creates a picturesque backdrop, or because that area isn't suitable for farming, and you know, hundreds of years ago when it was first established, that was a better use of the resource. In the examples that we've got locally, where a river runs through, they do remove golf balls periodically from where they go into the water, but not every day. Our sort of longer term objective as a wildlife trust is to make the water quality cleaner, because that helps wildlife and it also helps people. So we advise them, we advise farmers, we advise other people that own land along the river on how they can reduce their impact on the river itself. And that covers everything from the use of chemicals to management to soil runoff and things like that, which often are just intrinsically linked into, again, the business management. If the golf course is losing during kind of high levels of rainfall soil into the river, that's polluting the river in the first instance, but it's also eroding the golf course, which, you know, is not sustainable in the longer term. So some of those things are easy to change from a management perspective, will help clean up the river, and it economically beneficial to the golf course itself.
Do you cringe slightly every time you hear that a golf course has been spraying, or is it something that you understand is in many places a feature of disease prevention?
I think the similarities with the farming industry in that, you know, there's a utopian idea of what we'd like to see from a wildlife perspective, but equally there's the society kind of demands of where we're currently at. And our belief is that if we can change behaviours over time, we can start to influence people and show them the way in which they can achieve things. And that, coupled with legislative changes, can move in a direction where wildlife is more central to decision-making across the board.
Yeah.
We can't change all of that overnight. So in Warwickshire, we're trying to create demonstration examples of how golf courses have been able to see the value for wildlife within their business and set that template that others can then look to follow in the future. Mm. We're recognising that, you know, things aren't going to change overnight in terms of widespread practice and management practice.
Yeah.
But it's heading in the right direction.
You said, you know, that a benefit to the golf course of wildlife.
Yeah.
You mentioned something like barn owls, letting the grass lot along so there's rodents which the barn owls can then eat. Where does the benefit to the golf... It's a horrible question because obviously barn owls are fantastic. Why wouldn't you want them? Is there a tangible benefit to a golf course having it other than it being potential tourist attraction almost?
You know? So there is now more and more scientific evidence that shows that if people interact with wildlife, you feel better about it. So if you're sat in an office all day, like I am now, looking at a wall... I'll go home feeling a bit tired and jaded. If I go outside and interact with wildlife, even on a very basic level, I will feel better than I would have done if I didn't otherwise. That concept can be transferred to a player experience in golf, in that if you have two people that go and play golf, one at a golf course that is full of wildlife and that they maybe see a deer fleet by when they're on the driving range, or if they come across, they're playing towards the beginning or the end of the day and they see a barn owl hunting over the longer areas of grass, that person will have had an enhanced player experience than somebody else who's just gone and you know, played in a desert golf course that is absolutely devoid of wildlife completely.
Yeah.
And we've been working with universities, the University of Essex and the University of Derby, to monitor people's health and well-being, to scientifically recognise the benefits of being outside in the natural world and interacting with nature.
Mm-hmm.
And it's proving what we, you know, knew for a long time, that, you know, if you get up in the morning and take your dog for a walk before you go to work, you feel better as a result of it. And the more natural that experience is, the better it is. So, you know, if you take your dog through a walk of a concrete jungle in the city and there's no greenery at all, you don't come back feeling as good, even though you've had that physical activity, as you would do if you're outside in a natural world. So that, in theory, should help with membership retention for the golf courses and attracting new members and making them more sustainable.
Yeah.
Then alongside all that, you've got the cost savings, potentially, of managing the soils better, you know, managing equipment and staff resource more focused on the areas that they actually need to, and reducing the amount of time that they're doing on other areas, because most of the wildlife tweaks that we suggest are actually reducing the intensity or the time spent on some of the non-playing areas, which enables them more time to focus on the playing areas, which in theory should improve the playing experience of the golf.
Absolutely.
So there are plenty of benefits beyond just isn't it nice to see a barn owl to the actual golf course, whether they be financial, whether they be efficiency, whether they be member attention and attraction in the first place.
Is it all, that's really interesting, is it all about the rough areas out of play area, or is there anything on the fairways and the greens that the correct maintenance of those actually benefits wildlife? I'm thinking, you know, flies and little birds getting the flies, or anything on the smallest level to that. Is it just about the rough area, or are the in-play areas, are they also contributing to the...
I think the short answer to that is it's everything, but we've got to take one step at a time.
Yeah.
And again, using the farming analogy, the whole farm is a potential haven and home for wildlife, but whilst we still need to maintain food production, we need to balance and recognise that if we try and go too intense on the wildlife advice side of things, we're probably going to put people off before we've started. So certainly the conversations I've been having with golf courses has been, like I say, trying to respect the fact that they're not going to change everything overnight. If we can get some measured improvements for wildlife around the course by not changing, you know, everything that they do, then over time, when we've built that relationship and that confidence and that interest, we can start to change other things if they're happy to do so. Mm. But if we were going to go in and try and change everything from, you know, the infield play stuff on the fairways and greens as well, we may be, you know, trying to change things too quickly.
Yeah.
And so maybe not from the greenkeepers and the guys we're talking to's perception, because they understand the value of wildlife, but we've got to remember that we've got to try and convince the most sceptical person who may be in the golf club membership, who might be that voice of, well, why can't everything just stay like it used to be?
Mm-hmm.
And for that process to happen, we need to gradually build that relationship.
Yeah. I was going to ask you where you start if you're doing nothing. If you're a greenkeeper going about your daily business and you're not really thinking about it. And it actually brought to mind what we've done at Bigger, which is we didn't have any written plan Bigger for our own, you know, reducing our own carbon footprint and our waste and that. So I started putting one together and I started asking around, like, what are we doing? And it turned out we were doing a huge amount without actually realizing we were doing a huge amount. And I wonder if that's the answer to where do you start. Just start listing what you do.
Yeah.
And then put together a plan. And then maybe where you can work better.
I think that's a great starting point. I also think that reaching out to local groups, interest groups, or other golf courses is really useful as well, because there's a whole lot of information out there and there's lots of keen enthusiasts that want to, you know, just... In our area, we've got, you know, specialist people who maybe their specialist subject is butterflies or birds, and they're just keen to go over and try and find the latest thing or the new thing or see where a particular species is found across the county. And they're looking just to have opportunities. So a way in which the Wildlife Trust works is to introduce the kind of specialist groups, maybe somebody who's really keen on bird watching, and ask the golf club if they're happy for them to come on and do an on-site bird survey.
Yeah.
And that can, along with, you know, anecdotal evidence of the club, give you a full list of everything you've got already, which can help then inform what you then do next, because the same idea isn't right everywhere. You've got to think about how that golf course fits into the wider landscape and what habitats are there and what wildlife's there already.
Mm-hmm.
Because without that, the best intentions might be impacting on something you've got that's really good that you've maybe not noticed. Because not everything is really obvious straight away. So our first starting point is normally try and work out what you've been doing, try and work out the value of what's already there, then work out what you'd like to see and how that fits into the landscape, and then talk to people, because it's so much better if you can bring in other people. Because, you know, greenkeepers are really busy people and they've got their own priorities of, you know, doing the day job. So we need to get all these ideas and suggestions to fit around what they need to do as well. It's not like they've got hours to kill that they're just thinking, what should we do today?
Yeah. And you've been working with Coventry for a few years now. What's your biggest takeaway from the thing? Have you learnt a lot that you didn't know already? Has it been a two-way arrangement?
Yeah. I think what I've learned is actually how you can assume that because somebody perhaps their day job is something else, that they might not care as much as you do, or they might not be as inspired as much as you are. And you know, some of the examples, like the visits that I've been on where the greenkeepers have been showing their really old trees on the golf course, or showing me the video of the otter, and the excitement that they have from that and the pride that they have on managing their sites is, you know, just the same as we get from managing our nature reserves. So it's in a situation we're in at the moment where wildlife is in decline, this country, it's, you know, it's heading in a free fall direction where so many species are on their way to extinction unless we do something. It can get quite depressing in the conservation sector, because you think, well, nothing is happening to change this direction of species decline and species extinction. But then you meet these guys who are out on the ground making space for nature in their own little way. And that's what we need to try and help nature's recovery, basically everyone doing their little bit. If every golf course in the country, if every farm, if every garden just made a little bit of space for nature as part of what they did, then collectively we would all have enough to reverse some of these declines that we've had.
Well, and you think it'll make a difference?
I do, yeah. And it, you know, it's about inspiring people, and, you know, going to the Bigger conference and sitting in a room full of 60 people and hearing those examples from around the country of, you know, people making their own bird boxes and putting up 100 bird boxes across the golf course, and other people doing other things that were just, you know, really passionate about it, but taking other people on the journey with them, which is important.
The Green Room Golf Course podcast is produced by myself, Carl Hansel, on behalf of the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. For questions, comments and concerns, you can get in touch with me by emailing carl@bigger.co.uk. That's Carl with a K. You can also join the conversation on social media using @greenroombigger. And we've also got a Facebook page where all the latest notices, news releases and information from Bigger can be found. We're also on Instagram using @bigger_HQ. Subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. The more people know about the sports turf industry, the more understanding they will have about the hard work of bigger members and other greenkeepers. And speaking of bigger membership, if you're inspired by what you hear to progress your career in greenkeeping, then a major first step is signing up to the association. The opportunities for career development are countless and potentially life-changing, such as volunteer opportunities at major tournaments and educational opportunities across Europe and the USA. Don't forget, if you're a golfer and you've got any questions about anything you hear on the podcast, have a conversation with the greenkeepers at your club. They've got the expertise to explain what's happening at the course and how it fits into the team's long-term vision to improve playability and enjoyment of the facility.